Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets. If you don't win your first bet, that's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
This is your moment, your time to shine, your comeback. You're ready for the next step in your career, and you want an education employers respect. So you're not just going back to school. You're coming back with Purdue Global. Backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected public universities, Purdue Global is built for people who bring their life experience into the online classroom. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Here's something you might not know about wireless. Sometimes what you see isn't what you get. But with Visible, what you see is what you get. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. Just $25 per month, taxes and fees included. Switch now at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com. Hello, the internet, and welcome to season 266, episode 4 of Der Daily Zeitgeist!
Yeah.
Production of iHeartRadio, just 400 shy of the season that we've all been waiting for, season 666.
We're so close.
Yeah, because I'm cool and stuff. Fucking twisted. This is a podcast where we take a deep dive into America's shared consciousness, and it's Thursday, December 8th, 2022. Is it? No, what would this be? The 17th day of Christmas? So we don't do that.
Oh, I was like, where are you going with this?
What sort of birds do they give you on the 17th day of Christmas?
17 pigeons flocking?
17 dead pigeons.
Aye.
My name is Jack O'Brien, a.k.a. Mama, take this glass from me. I can't chug it anymore. My milky throat's too thick to speak. Feel like I'm knocking on heaven's door.
Wow.
Knock, knock, knocking on heaven's door. Yeah, I know you wanted to cut me off before. Hey, yeah, yeah. Knock, knock, knocking on heaven's door. All right, that is courtesy of Blake Rogers. Ooh. And I'm thrilled to be joined, as always, when Miles is out, by a very special guest co-host, one of the EPs on this very network, the King of Sting, that bitch on Twitch. It's DJ Daniel Goodman!
Get your lighters up for that, AKA. Well done, Jack. You totally crushed that one.
Oh, man. I was a little flat coming out of the gates. But
I think you sounded great. It is your boy, DJ Daniel. Happy to be here, AKA. I forgot to ask someone on Twitter, but I'll stick with Mr. Steal Your Aerial. Yes, check me out on Twitch playing Rocket League and being bad at it. Anyway, happy to be
Steal
here.
Your
happy to be
aerial.
Here. Yeah, it's okay. When you fly up in the air and hit the ball. It's, I don't know. It's a real niche joke for the people who play the game. They're like, oh, I get that. And for 98% of the listening audience, they're like, what are you talking about?
I thought you were headed for Steal Your Areola.
Whoa.
Very, very confused.
Whoa. That'd be a weird nickname. That's a different podcast.
Yes. Anyways, we are thrilled to be joined in our third and fourth seats by the hosts of the podcast A Matter of Degrees, which tells stories about the powerful forces behind climate change and the tools we have to fix it. Please welcome the brilliant and accomplished Dr. Leah Stokes and Dr. Catherine Wilkinson!
What's up, guys? Hey. Hi. Hey. I like to make the intros extra dumb when we have like esteemed guests so that you guys just know what you're in for.
We're not real doctors, just to be clear. I mean, we have doctorates, but we can't not perform surgery or anything like that. Just want to get that.
No, not
out of
even
the,
like stitches, yeah. Barely no. A Band-Aid. Some
yes.
Okay. Doctors nonetheless.
That is that counts in my book. Mm. And
amen.
Yeah. If I even got close to a doctorate, I would make people call me doctor, including my kids and a wife. So
who is a doctor?
Who is a doctor? But I would really like
an
to,
actual doctor.
Yeah, she's an actual doctor.
Well, that might annoy her a lot.
Yeah.
I think you should stay undoctorated for the foreseeable future.
I'm annoyed by the fact that she's a doctor. And when we say, hey, how's your day? She has like life-changing stories of how she, you know, helped people. And I'm like, I almost introduced Miles and Daniel was the guest host. It's a mess, babe. How are you guys doing? Where are you coming to us from?
Well, I'm in sunny Santa Barbara, California, the best place to live in America. I love it here. It's always beautiful here.
Good. That's wonderful.
Shout out.
I am. I'm joining from Atlanta, Georgia, which, I mean, hallelujah. It is a good day.
Amen to that. Yes.
Oh, yeah. Very true.
Wow.
Very
thank goodness.
Yes.
Yeah.
Hold it out by service. The skin of our teeth.
I'm assuming. Yeah. Thank you for your service. Voting for the right side on that one.
Oh, yes.
The left side is, I think, what you meant to
there
say.
There we go. Yes.
The left side being the right side.
Indeed.
Yes. Well, that's good. That's big news that I think we're all happy. 2 days later, I guess. But yes, good day.
Right.
Because this drops tomorrow. But
right. Yeah. Yeah.
Of course.
Good. It'll still be a good day.
It'll still be
a good day in Georgia, blue Georgia.
6 years, you know, it's a lot. Like if we'd had to have Herschel Walker for 6 years.
Oof. I don't think he would have lasted. Like, I don't know.
I think he probably would have quit.
Yeah.
Quit,
that or the werewolves would have gotten him. So, you know.
Yeah,
the werewolves. Yeah. That's right.
An
or
actual
vampires,
werewolf attack. Yeah. That would have been impressive. Anyways, we're going to get to know you both a little bit better in a moment. First, we're going to tell our listeners a couple of things we're talking about today. I want to talk to you both about climate change as a mass mental health event that gets ignored by the mainstream media. We might talk a little bit about effective altruism, that movement, and just what we're learning about the truth around that movement. And I'd be, again, curious to hear y'all's thoughts on that one. We are going to talk about TGI Fridays, mott sticks, got no mots. We might actually just skip right to that and talk about only that.
That seems really important on the climate issues. I mean, that I put right at the top.
Yeah.
It's high up there.
Yeah. I heard your mott stick episode. It was pretty good. It was you got to some really interesting places. All of that, plenty more. But before we get to any of that, we do like to ask our guests, what is something from your search histories that is revealing about who you are? Catherine, you want to start us off?
Sure. I looked and I was like, what's sort of weird and illuminating here? Horse head bumper.
Horse head bumper.
Yeah, okay. Was one. So I'm a horse mom and...
That's how you like to greet them, with a little head bump?
A little head bump. Yeah. It's like a little thing that they wear on their head if they have to travel. So that if they freak out, which he does, and fling their head in the air, they don't also split their skull open. So it's like a really dorky kind of like thick leather Pope cap is kind of how it looks.
Okay. Which Pope cap? Because Pope hats can get pretty wild.
I'm thinking like the curvy one.
The
like
little curvy one. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. That is a good point.
More modest Pope hat. Yeah. Mm.
There might be some really interesting directions to take horse bumpers in the whole Pope hat.
Yeah.
Variety.
The
yeah. Mm-hmm. That, I feel like I haven't seen the big good Pope hat in a while. The one that's just not really like any other hat that has ever been worn by anyone else. It's just the size of a large basket, like a clothing hamper, just on top of someone's head. I don't know why that's what I went with.
Holding in all that hair.
But
for some reason, this is making me wonder how the Pope feels about White Lotus and if he's been watching this season.
Huge fan,
and
I'd imagine.
Maybe if he'll appear in the finale. These are all questions that are now coming up for me.
Yeah. There's a lot of religious art in there. Mm. So who knows? Yep. How about you, Leah? What's something from your search history that's revealing about who you are?
Well, one of the most recent things I searched was Mistress America trailer, which is a movie directed by Greta Gerwig. I was reading a long profile about her, and the secret to my productivity is that I don't really watch movies. I watch movie trailers. And so on any given day, I'm searching a trailer. I mean, most movie trailers give you the entire story in like 2.5 minutes and then you're done. You don't really have to watch the movie. So.
And they're so emotional. They all pack all those emotions in there.
Uh-huh. Why don't we have like best trailer awards at the Oscars? You know?
I've asked this question many times.
A brilliant observation. Something desperately needed and not enough credit given to those trailer cutters.
Right?
Yeah.
Exactly. Amazing. They're the unsung heroes of our time, really.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Are they the same people who do like the emotional sports video stories like for the Olympics? Gosh. You know, those little like...
Oh my God.
They take you on that same emotional roller coaster in 2.5 minutes before the next like 100 meter, whatever.
Yeah. Just make you weep.
I'm such a baby for those. They make me cry every single time. I love an emotional Olympic story.
Yeah.
Micro emotional roller coasters.
Yes.
That's like a professional skill set.
Mm-hmm.
I just looked at the runtime for Avatar 2, The Way of the Water.
And
it is... Like, not, it is not a number that I've ever seen as a runtime before.
What, does it have a 3 hours in the front of it?
Well, but they didn't do it. It was like 190 something minutes.
Okay. Oh, wow. So 3 hours 10.
Yeah, three hours 10 minutes.
That's a long
movie. They don't want you to know. Yeah. They're like, maybe you can't do the math.
Yeah, this dumb can't do math. He'll just go to the movie. But I'm excited to see that, but a little less excited. I might just watch the trailer a number
of times. Right? Just, I mean, you're gonna find out the whole plot, who dies, what the romance is. I mean, you just need 2.5 minutes. There you go. Fair.
How was the Greta Gerwig trailer?
It was great. I mean, I love Greta Gerwig. I should probably actually watch the movie. Like, that is something that I should maybe give time to. But you know what I did give time to was the extremely long profile about her. So I have time to read. I just don't always have time to watch.
Yeah.
You know, 2 hour movies.
I mean, God bless. You're far more enriched for it, for giving time to reading more than watching. Like, props to you on that one.
Right. Gold star.
Gold star.
I'm like the last person in America who still reads, it appears. So,
so this is not the Barbie movie that we've been covering.
No, but it was about the Barbie movie. And did you see those stills? They were amazing. Oh my God.
I mean, the stills have been incredible. But Greta Gerwig has another more serious film dropping before that. Or maybe
it's actually old. I mean, why would you think I'm up to speed on culture here? No, this is from years ago.
Mistress America is old.
It's old, yeah. Just to be clear.
Okay.
I'm not watching current trailers, okay? I'm not that hip.
Cutting edge, watching current trailers.
Watching trailers from 7 years ago. That is I do with my time, yes.
Okay, cool. Leah, what is something you think is overrated?
Okay, you ready for it? Gas stoves.
Ooh. Okay.
Why did I go there? Okay. Well, you know, cooking with gas, right? Everybody thinks they're so great. Actually, they poison you and blow up your house and put carcinogens into the air, and they're terrible. So every time I watch a home renovation show and they put a new gas stove in, I'm like, a fairy just died. That is the worst thing I've ever seen. Gas stoves are terrible for you and the planet.
What is the fairy just died?
All right.
Why did a fairy die? Because fairies die when you put in gas stoves. I don't know if you knew that. That's like a new scientific paper that just came out.
It's that tick, tick, tick.
That's what I hear when you're trying to get the stove going and it tick, tick, tick. That's a fairy. That's a dead
fairy.
And then you
have the one burner that just keeps going.
Exactly. Yeah. Or the one burner that doesn't light and then you're smelling that smell of gas. Yeah. And that's like bad. That's not good for your health.
You're right.
I didn't know all that stuff about it being bad and that it was going to blow up my house.
Yeah, dude. I mean,
100%
and give your kids asthma.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Is that real?
Yeah. 42% more likely to have asthma if you grow up in a house with a gas stove. I'm currently renovating my house to get rid of my gas stove amongst all other gas appliances. And so we're in an Airbnb right now. And there's a super sketchy gas stove here. And there's one of those like vents really high in the ceiling that definitely doesn't do anything. And every time I turn it on, I'm like, wow, I'm just like poisoning my children. This is awesome. Love this.
Love this. Yeah.
Noted.
Yeah.
How about you, Catherine? What's something that you think is overrated?
So I'll stick on the, you know, planetary nerd theme. Recycling, I think, is overrated. Mm. Listen, ooh, like, I am a recycler hardcore for forever, but it struck me anew last weekend. I was in a like non-climate people conversation. I was like, people think that recycling is like 90% of the problem or right, the opportunity. Like, I'm like, hey, how is this?
I recycle every time, all right?
Listen, so, like, let's recycle. But I'm like, how? We're like really missing the forest for the one recycled tree here. Like, it's
the only thing that they gave us for a long time, right? Mm-hmm. It was the only information they gave us was like, the planet's dying. And here's something you can do that's marginally better than the other thing. And we were like, all right, on it. Thank you. We know our assignment. Yeah.
Well, and the fossil fuel industry was like, we're going to hype this whole recycling thing as the solution to the plastic problem. Mm. And then we'll like get people not to pay attention to all the rest of what's happening. And so also there was like a lot of money that went into making recycling.
Oh, yeah.
The thing, even though like we recycle like 5 to 6% of plastic.
Right.
So it's not the solution to the thing. Anyway, my point is, I'm like, we got to get out of like this myopia of recycling as the barometer.
How often you hear myopia on this show? I mean, you just like brought it.
Not enough.
I mean, but we have some doctors, so I figured that,
we're doing some GRE words today. Yeah. SAT words, GRE words, they're in the house.
The level has definitely been raised. I think the thing on recycling that I think is so, thank you for bringing that up, because what was so funny about like the recycling trend of like the 90s and stuff like that was, it was a three-word phrase. Reduce, reuse, recycle. There was a whole phrase to it that really just got shortened to, oh, just throw your bottles in the blue bin and then you're all good. It's safe. Like, what happened to the reduce your usage first and foremost? Reuse, take those plastic bags and those bottles, maybe reuse that again. Maybe you use that thing another time before you just decide to toss it out, and then recycle as the final stage of the development here, or the final stage of the process here. It is just a shortening to like, oh, let's get to the part where you're still just throwing it out. So I feel you very
like,
wholeheartedly.
You know, stay fully on the like wild one-use consumption bandwagon. Just find the blue bin. Who knows where?
Find
where
the blue bin. Up. Yeah, no, forget that.
But I will say one thing. Recycling aluminum, before you guys all get cynical, that is underrated. Aluminum is like the most recyclable material. If you throw...
it can go forever.
Coke can in the garbage in front of me, I will stick my hand in the garbage and save it because the stakes are too high. I need to save that can. So you need to recycle aluminum cans. Very important. Cool.
Do it. Yeah. And if you're going to get a drink in a container, get it in aluminum because it's super valuable and it can recycle indefinitely. So like you don't have to worry about it.
This
sparkle your water in your aluminum cans. Go for
this makes me feel so much better about my yerba mate consumption because those are aluminum cans and they're all about sustainability. So I'm like, great. The product's good and the recyclability is sustainable. Solution. Let's go. Drink them aluminum cans.
What's the aluminum water? The aluminum can.
La Croix.
Liquid death?
La Croix. Oh.
Liquid death. Liquid death.
Oh, or that.
But both. Okay. Both. Yeah.
La Croix also. I mean,
fake French. It's not actually French at all. It's American, but it sounds French.
Yeah. Except for not if you call it La Croix, which is, LaCroix. I feel, the major interpretation.
Okay. Some of us speak French in this conversation.
Yeah. What is something that you think is underrated, Catherine?
Man, I think tempeh.
Tempeh.
Great.
It's underrated.
And
I'll tell you why.
On that one.
I'll tell you why. So I've been vegetarian for a long time, coming up on 25 years. And
thank you for your service.
Tempeh is like a better experience than tofu, but it's not, you see tofu so much more often. But tempeh is like, it's better for you. The texture's better. It's easier to cook with. And I don't know, you know, we've got all these like newfangled fake meats, which like I am happy on occasion to have an Impossible Burger or whatever. But like tempeh, it's like actually a really good citizen. And I had something at a restaurant with it recently and I was like, this is underrated. This should be on more menus. So that's my plug. That's my plug for the humble fermented soybean cake that is tempeh.
So it's like a little chewier. Is that
yeah, yeah, it's a little like, it's,
I'm only familiar with the city in Arizona. Yeah,
it's a little, okay. Oh yeah, different tempeh, but
okay, got it, got
but
it.
Maybe it's spelled every maybe like maybe we could study that and see like, is the food tempeh everywhere in tempeh? I don't know.
Yeah,
probably not.
How do they
probably
do it not.
Traditional Indonesian food made from fermented soybeans. Okay, I'm here for
so
it.
So I think you get those like probiotic good things anyway.
Yeah, the ferment.
That's what I got.
I'm with that.
How about you, Leah? What is something you think is underrated?
Well, I think I'm continuing along with this crunchy granola climate trend here, which is, for those who know me or listen to anything I've ever created, they will not be surprised by this answer. Probably Catherine could guess it. The underrated thing is a heat pump. What is a heat pump, you ask? It is an efficient electric machine that can both heat and cool your home, one-stop shopping, and it doesn't require any fossil fuels. It does not require gas. And so, you know, that whole thing about poisoning yourself, you don't have to poison yourself. You can have a heat pump and, you know, both heat and cool your home. These are amazing machines. They should be as well known as electric vehicles, but they are not. Heat pumps are definitely underrated.
Cool. What? Wow. So I just have my kids out there just pumping away at it the whole time. Or what am I?
Oh my God. Guess what? It uses electricity. There's this thing. I don't know if you've heard of it. It's called electricity. Okay. Yeah. It like does stuff, you know, charges your phone, you know, allows you to listen to this podcast, but also can heat and cool your home. I don't know if you knew that.
I did not. No. Yeah. All right. The heat pump, and it's not like loud.
I'll say they sound like magic. So in the summer, they take the heat that's in your home and they stick it outside.
They're like, it's too hot in here. I'm getting rid
it's
of that
too hot,
hot
in
heat.
Here. Get it out. And in the winter, they manage to grab the heat that is outside and send it into your home.
There's magical little heat outside that you didn't know about. And the fairies, there are fairies inside the heat pump. See, you've killed the fairies when you buy the gas stove. And then you know, they come back to life if you get the heat pump.
I was
going to
ask what the effect was on fairies.
So the fairies
good.
Bring, they find the heat outside and the fairies bring that into the house. That's how a heat pump works. That's science right there.
We were talking on the Halloween episode how, like, in Google's top ranking of costumes, like, all of the top costumes are things that have major motion pictures that have like been made about them or are part of a major motion pictures. But one of the top three year after year is fairies. And like, I feel like they haven't really gotten their due. Like a lot of the ones that are, you know, little girl costumes haven't gotten their due. But
well,
I foresee a big fairy franchise in the future.
Yeah. Because I don't know if you knew this, one of the groups I work with, Rewiring America, which is all about the heat pump, we actually made heat pump Halloween costumes this year. So there were many people. I mean, not like enough to get on
no,
the
Leah,
top.
No, Leah, there are probably like nine.
many people.
Many people.
People across America became heat pumps for Halloween. I don't know if you knew that. It was a whole trend. I don't know why you missed it. It was huge, actually. I could send you photos.
Oh, yeah, I'm looking.
This is when climate Twitter gets like really all aflutter.
Yeah. Like when people dress up as heat pumps, I mean, it's just getting real, you know? It's just like the excitement through the roof.
Yeah.
Yeah, that explains all the kids in giant squares that were coming up to my door for Halloween. Right? I was like, what are you? And I just couldn't understand. They were talking through this giant square. And I was like, it sounds like heat. You want a Heath bar? Oh, yeah. Heat. Got it.
Yes,
okay, cool.
That was the trend. I don't know why you missed it. It was really big on TikTok. All the kids
totally
are doing
makes sense.
It. It's totally hot right now and cool as well.
Very viral. Hot and cool. Except that.
I feel, Leah, that the heat pump movie should never be made, but it does need a trailer.
Yes, exactly.
Yes.
We need a heat pump movie trailer. Exactly.
Yeah, with that dramatic music from, yeah. All right, let's take a quick break and we'll come back and talk about climate.
Do you want to hear about the $100 wedding dress that just saved Abercrombie?
Or the tech acquisition that was just like Game of Thrones?
Or the one financial equation that can solve climate change?
Then check out our daily podcast, The Best One Yet, or as we call it, T-Boy.
This is Nick.
This is Jack.
And we pick the three most interesting business news stories every day for the perfect mix.
20 minutes each morning, you're going to feel brighter.
We call it Pop Biz, don't we, Jack?
Where pop culture meets business news. So whether you want to kick off a conversation with your buddies,
or you're going for that promotion at work,
or you just want to know the trends before your friends,
feel brighter by starting your morning with us every weekday.
Listen to the best one yet on the Wondery app or wherever you get your pods.
You can listen to the best one yet ad-free right now on Wondery Plus. For more deep dive and daily business content, listen on Wondery, the destination for business podcasts.
With shows like The Best One Yet, How I Built This, and many more, Wondery means business.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
There's a lot happening these days, but I have just the thing to get you up to speed on what matters without taking too much of your time. The 7 from the Washington Post is a podcast that gives you the 7 most important and interesting stories, and we always try to save room for something fun. You get it all in about 7 minutes or less. I'm Hannah Jewell. I'll get you caught up with the 7 every weekday. So follow the 7 right now.
And we're back. And yeah, so you guys had a great episode of your podcast where you talked about like the trauma of climate change. And you also mentioned something that we talk about a lot on this show, which is just the way that the mainstream media, like there's an overall sense that you're being gaslit by the world of like serious people making decisions who say things about climate change being a priority and like say the right things, but then they don't do any of the things that suggest they actually believe that climate is a priority or that like this, you know, existential catastrophic threat that is facing us is real. And I don't know, just like as it's kind of come more and more into focus, it's like I'm thinking back on these New York Times stories I've seen where they're like, you know, the young people are having a mental health crisis and nobody knows why. I think it's social media and like don't mention climate change once. So, yeah, I'd just be interested in kind of hearing what your perspective is on that, and specifically as it relates to not just like climate activists, but just like people who see this happening in the headlines and you know, are just dealing with the dissonance of like, oh, so this is going to really, it is already harming and killing people and is going to make the world way worse. And then we just talk about the stock market like it's, you know, the most important thing instead of a report about like how well people are making money off of causing the problem that we're supposed to be worried about.
Right.
But yeah, like what just, that's a big word salad, but what are your thoughts on just like this, the mental toll that this takes?
I remember it was a couple months ago, maybe, that the New York Times put out a little like mini documentary kind of video about young people and mental health crisis and suicide. And I was like, when are they going to say, surely they're going to come to it next. Are they going to say something? Nope. Right. Even one of the interviewees says something to the tune of like, you know, there's not going to be a planet to live on. And like, they never tease that out as a major driver. Yeah. Like, and I was just kind of like, what? Like, what? Especially because there has been some really important research that's come out in the last couple of years, actually documenting this trend among young people. So one of the folks that we had on that episode, Dr. Britt Ray at Stanford, she was one of the authors on a study that came out in The Lancet last year. They surveyed 10,000 young people across 10 countries. And the thing that came through in that study so profoundly is the way that the burden of this crisis is already impacting the day-to-day lives of most young people, and particularly young people in the global south. But not just that, it's the double whammy of feeling betrayed, right?
Yeah.
That exactly what you're saying, that sense of being gaslit and totally let down by the people that are like wearing the moniker of leadership and absolutely not doing their job when it comes to making sure, I don't know, we get to keep living on this extraordinary planet that grows food and like flows water and does all of these amazing things that make it incredible to live here. And yeah, COP27, you know who had the most delegates at that little shindig? The Global Conference of the Parties, the annual sort of rendezvous to talk about our collective future. The fucking fossil fuel industry had the most delegates, except the United Arab Emirates, which is basically also part of the fossil fuel industry. Yeah. And it's like, this whole thing is insane. And the fact that young people are feeling that and seeing it, and then they don't have anywhere to take that, right? Like, there are no containers to be heard and seen. And, you know, unless they find themselves in like a great chapter of the Sunrise Movement or something. And even then, like, holding the existential dread that like any logical being is feeling in this moment, you know, it's bananas. And not to mention parents, you know, who are also grappling with like, my child is learning about this in school, and how do I even have a conversation with them?
Yeah, your options are basically to discredit science or acknowledge that the world is broken, you know?
Or be like, well, at least we recycle.
Right. Yeah. But even that is, you know, inherently like at its core dishonest to be like, but we're good because we recycle. Like I don't know. Yeah.
Yeah, totally. But you know, one thing about our show is that A Matter of Degrees is that we don't trade in hopelessness. We're not down for that. So,
yeah,
that is correct.
We actually also did this mini series about what can I do? And it's a 3-part series this season that talks about what can I do about climate change. And unsurprisingly, it talks about getting a heat pump, you know, moving your money so that it's not investing in the fossil fuel industry, thinking about how your job can contribute to it. I mean, like right now you guys are climate activists. I don't know if you knew that. Like your jobs
you're
are
on
helping.
The team.
Yeah, you're on the team because you had us on your show, and now we're talking about climate change, bada boom, bada bang, that's it right there, you know. And also political activism, right? How do we make sure we elect climate champions? And we had folks on from this nonprofit called Climate Cabinet that helps elect climate champions like all up and down the ballot. So, you know, it's not about hopelessness. It's actually about, you know, recognizing that we are in a bad place, but that there are things that we as people can do about it. And the biggest things we can do is actually join together with other people to take political action, to help change laws, to make a difference in our communities. But even short of that, you know, getting a heat pump, getting an induction stove, getting an electric vehicle, getting an e-bike, right? There are lots
voting
of things
for
we
Senator
can do.
Warnock.
Yeah, voting. Love that. That's a great one. You know, there's lots of things we can do. So it's not about hopelessness.
Yeah.
But it's also not about being unrealistic about the situation that we're in and, you know, being real with people about how bad this is.
There's no Pollyanna bullshit happening either. Yeah. Like we're like, we've got to look at the hard reality of where we are and what's headed our way.
Yeah.
Even if we do everything that we can as fast as we can, we're still going to have some really intense challenges coming. And to realize we have this absolutely stocked toolbox of solutions that are not just like someday, maybe if the effective altruists funded, like, no, it's like stuff we have now and it's working and it makes us healthier and it saves us money. Mm-hmm. And also, even on the climate and mental health stuff, there are actually solutions. Like, we don't just have to curl up in the fetal position alone and despair. like that episode is about how to cope with all the climate feels, because we're going to keep feeling them. And a lot of that is also about coming together in community for conversation and feeling like we're not alone.
Yeah, there's a really cool thing on task shifting that I want to talk about. But just like going back to the sort of mainstream media sort of blind spot, because I don't think that that is something that most people think that when they turn on NPR or like read the New York Times, that they're getting a version of things that are like partaking in this. And I do feel like that is a big part of the problem is, you know, like you said, you have this thing and it feels like there's not a intuitive place to go with it. And it feels like you're reading these contradictory things in, you know, what is supposed to be the mainstream media. And it just, I don't know, like an honesty and an owning it and like a naming it of like that there is this enormous trauma that we should all be acknowledging and working through together while we're trying to do things about it individually. But I don't know.
Really.
I mean, that's a big part of finding a solution that makes it so that the fossil fuel companies don't get to continue to completely define, you know, that they're fighting things on that level, like by, you know, giving the New York Times a shitload of money and stuff to like, be one of the biggest advertisers at the New York Times.
I mean, here's the reality. Fossil fuel companies knew about climate change decades ago.
Before
they had scientists. Yeah, way before everyday people.
Basically.
They did. Yeah. They had scientists like at Exxon, for example, ExxonMobil. They had a different name at the time, but they had scientists who were doing research and they were, you know, realizing that when you burn fossil fuels and you put carbon pollution and other greenhouse gases into the atmosphere, you warm the planet. When you warm the planet, a lot of bad things happen, like drought and, you know, more intense hurricanes and really extreme rainfall and heat waves that kill people. And, you know, the crazy flooding, for example, that's happening in Pakistan right now, the insane Hurricane Ian, probably going to be the most expensive hurricane in Florida history. You know, all these things that are happening, they're linked to climate change. Mm-hmm. And fossil fuel companies knew about that. And what did they do? They lied. They intentionally lied to the American people. It's very similar to cigarette companies. You know, cigarette companies had their own scientists. They knew that cigarettes caused cancer, but they lied. And the interesting thing about the cigarette companies is that they were eventually held accountable by the U.S. justice system, right? They had to pay big fines for what they did. And that is what we need to see for fossil fuel companies, too. We need to see these companies be held accountable for the decisions that they made to lie to the American people and, you know, make it so that you didn't have other choices other than fossil fuels for decades. The good thing is we're in a moment now where there are other choices. You can get an electric vehicle. You don't have to use fossil fuels in your homes anymore. But, you know, fossil fuel companies really delayed that and they lied to the American people for decades. So they really need to be held accountable.
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
Straight
and
up.
Probably, I don't know. I mean, maybe they should have to sit in rooms with despairing young people and like absorb that trauma that they've manufactured, right? Both like physically and in this sense of gaslighting that you're talking about, Jack.
Yeah. And I think that there is this huge lie at the core of like just existence in the modern world. Like that also goes to everything that's happening, like this like rise of fascism, like nihilism among the rich, depression among the young, as we talked about, like a rise of deaths of despair, all these things that, you know, are caused by people just losing hope and faith and like belief in that they exist in like a just world that's like worth fighting for. And it just like getting that back into the conversation feels like an important part of the job.
And it's that flip side, I think, to the headlines, you know, that you were talking about, right? Of like, we need the headlines that make it clear that we're in a fucking mess and we're running out of time. And we need the headlines, or better yet, the feature films and the like compelling collective stories that help us imagine a transformed world, right? Like, so much of the climate conversation kind of publicly has been like, this is the world we want to avoid. Yeah. And it's going to take a whole bunch of misery and sacrifice to get there instead of like, this is the incredible future that's possible. Yeah. And this is what it could mean to go on that journey to get mm-hmm. there. I would watch that movie. Leah would probably watch more than the trailer.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's about abundance. You know, so much of what's been sold to us is that climate action is sacrifice. And no offense to the whole tempeh conversation earlier, right? But like, you know, it's not about.
I know I was not really doing any favors there.
It's not about giving up your hamburgers or sitting in the cold, dark room alone and not having a car, right? Guess what, guys? You can have a heat pump that heats your home. You can have an electric vehicle. You can probably even eat some meat or some fake meat that's going to exist that, you know, tastes exactly the same. But mm-hmm. didn't require as much carbon pollution, right? There is yeah. innovation happening right now mm-hmm. that allows us to live the way that we live and we like living without all this sacrifice. And the way that the fossil fuel industry has defined this is about sacrifice because that works for them. That way they can say, no, 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 don't change anything. Mm-hmm. Just keep using your dirty gas stove and your dirty, you know, oil-powered car. Just do that for like another couple decades because every single day that we delay, you know, getting the solar panels or the heat pumps or the electric vehicle. Every day we delay, it makes fossil fuel companies money. That's how they make money now. They're like delay machines. Yeah. And so they don't want us to think that there are alternatives, that we can keep living our lives and actually have healthier lives, pay less money for our energy bills. You know, they don't want us to understand the abundance that's coming for us if we act on climate change. They want us to think it's all doom and gloom and, you know, you're going to have to sit alone in the dark and eat your tempeh. You know, that's what they want us to think. Right. And Catherine's pointing out that tempeh is not so bad, actually.
Yeah.
I'd say give it a try. Give it a try.
It does feel like there's a lot of you guys are do a great job of like highlighting like very sophisticated and smart and like there's just a lot of energy, especially coming from this young generation towards like building a future that is sustainable. There's also a lot that is happening on the other side. Like you mentioned, the fossil fuel, like COP27 becoming a fossil fuel trade show and, you know, the even like effective altruism. I keep ranting about this, but it's really like it's fooled a lot of people, I think. And even like a very smart person who's like, you know, youngest philosophy professor at Oxford, like has fooled himself by like he thinks he went from like getting bed nets for people in need and like stopping human suffering in the here and now to he, you know, started hanging out with all these like venture capital bros and like billionaires. And suddenly climate change isn't as important as people say it is. And the thing that we really need to worry about is, you know, AI and, you know, shit where like he just like through osmosis is like absorbing.
Becoming an asshole? Is that what you're saying?
Becoming an asshole. But like it is very sophisticated. And it is like,
yeah.
I don't know. I think of like capitalism almost as its own AI that has like gone through the singularity like decades ago and is just like so sophisticated and is like fighting like that. That's what we're fighting against. And they keep coming up with these like ideas and arguments and ways to fund a form of civilization that is clearly unsustainable. Like that, that I feel like is the thing that, you know, they talk about in hypernormalization. Adam Curtis talks about this feeling that we're like just living next to this massive like organism that can't be understood or slowed down or like affected. Yeah. And so it's like, so, you know, it's fighting that. And I think like the thing that gives me the most hope is that it does seem like the younger generations are more aware and have a more realistic vision and like grasp of what the actual contours of this reality. But I also feel like the capitalist machine is going to do its best to create like very sophisticated ways and ideas and quote-unquote philosophies to like bring them into this bullshit, you know, framework that is currently coasting on inertia.
there's a really direct thread here too. So, you know, this whole Sam Bankman-Fried, you know, crypto crash that's going on, very tied to effective altruism, right? Because he justified his actions by saying, look, if I can make a lot of money, I can give it away. I can give it away to Democrats running for office. I can give it away to poor people or whatever. And that makes me a good person, even though the fundamental thing I'm doing is actually really bad.
Yes.
Why do I say that? Crypto, we did an episode recently on the podcast, on our podcast, Matter of Degrees, about cryptocurrency. And we dug into the climate impacts. And I got to say, like, whoa, that was super illuminating and dark. I don't know how much people know about crypto, but basically, in especially with Bitcoin, it's a giant number guessing machine that mm-hmm. requires enormous amounts of energy. And, you know, just that cryptocurrency alone, the negative environmental impacts from using so much dirty energy to just guess numbers, it's actually bigger than the positive effect right now of all electric vehicles deployed in a year. So every time you see an electric vehicle on the road, just think about the invisible crypto number guessing garbage that's going on in the background that is negating that positive momentum that we're making. And, you know, I think a lot of people sort of stuck their head in the sand around crypto and the fundamental fact that it uses so much energy and is very bad for the planet. I mean, literally keeping coal plants open to guess numbers. You know, and they stuck their head in the sand because they said, well, it's effective altruism. We're making money and then we're going to give that money away. And isn't that better? Because as long as we make money and give it to people, then like actually we're amazing people. We're better than those crunchy granola kids trying to shut down coal plants because actually we made money and we can give that away. And it becomes a very circular argument that doesn't cause people to look at the fundamental problem here, which is that you're using enormous amounts of dirty energy mm-hmm. to do something that actually isn't that useful.
Yeah.
And correct me if I'm wrong on crypto, especially with the whole number guessing thing, you get mm-hmm. diminishing returns over time because the numbers get harder to guess as yeah. the value of it fluctuates and whatnot. And so you're spending more and more energy to guess a smaller and smaller amount of like numbers to like mint coins or something. So eventually the cost of the energy, both actual like, you know, monetary cost, but cost of the environment then outweighs the actual value of the coin that's being minted.
Yeah, I mean, that's because it gets more competitive too, right? Like, if more people want to guess the number, they've got to get more powerful computers to do it so that they can generate more guesses faster, right? Mm-hmm. And it becomes a kind of arms race where it's like you need a really fast computer to guess faster. And the probability that you're going to win and get the number, it's going to get smaller if there's more competition and more machines actually guessing it. So yeah, basically the environmental impact can get bigger as there's more and more people guessing it on more and more powerful machines so that they get a chance to actually win that coin, right? So, I mean, in this episode that we did, we learned that China has actually banned cryptocurrency mining. So a lot of the miners moved to the United States in the last few years, and that there are literally coal plants in places like Montana that are staying open just to provide 24/7 electricity to people guessing numbers. Like, what? That is insane. You know, like if you kept the coal plant open because you were, you know, allowing poor people to heat their homes or, you know, something that was like somewhat useful. Okay, maybe. I mean, you should really shut down the coal plant. But like, this is literally just to guess numbers. Like, what? This is like, it's bananas.
Just the idea of hoarding an illogical amount of money, like an immoral amount of money. They even say, by the way, petrochemical careers are fine if you're creating wealth and giving it to a charity. But first of all, you're creating a person who works in petrochemicals, like who, which like the human mind and a human life is like so valuable and like capable of creating so much momentum and meaning in this world.
This is the thing.
And you are just throwing that away to create wealth cynically, to give it to you, who then you are saying that you are better able to distribute that wealth than anyone else in the world, that like all these thrown away lives of working in finance and petrochemicals are worth it so that you can have all of the money to distribute to all these different places because you're so much smarter than everyone, but you don't think climate change is a problem.
But it also like it misses such a fundamental point, which is there is real good, well-paid, profit-generating work to be done solving the climate crisis.
Yes.
So this idea of like, whatever you do for 8 or 10 or 12 or fucking 16 hours a day, if you're on Wall Street, like there's no way to make that part of the solution, which is just insane.
Wrong.
Like we yeah. should be trying to align the ways that we spend our time and our energy, and then also the ways that we align our money, right? But it's like overlooking an entire landscape. I mean, mm-hmm. I'm on some of, you know, I mostly get them because I'm interested, not because I'm like looking for a job in climate tech, but like I get these emails where I'm like, holy shit, there is so much hiring happening.
Yeah, man.
In these so much really hiring. Well-paid roles, like, you know, all this stuff. So it's like, what? And I mean, yeah. I'm an alum of Oxford. I don't want to like, you know, shit on my brethren, but like when it's deserved, it's deserved. And this is quintessential what Emily Atkin, our friend who does the climate newsletter Heated, calls first time climate dude. It's like, oh, it's a dude who thought about climate change for the first time and he now thinks he's an expert and he's probably going to publish like a piece in the New Yorker about how we're everything screwed or, you know, whatever, or something like this.
Yeah.
And, you know, beware if you're a first time climate dude, like do a bunch of listening.
Yeah.
First, primarily to women, and then maybe jump into the game.
And compare doing what effective altruism preaches, where you throw away your life working for an evil cause for like a petrochemical company so that you can then give your money to this one fund that is then, you know, already has too much more money than it knows what to do with
yeah.
task shifting that you guys talked about in your episode on like climate and mental health was like that. That's such a great example of like a way to contribute to the world that is like exponential growth. Like the idea that you teach other people to like help other people with mental health so that they
oh, yeah.
then can like build a movement of like mental health and people like being able to like cope with the immense amount of grief around climate change and like that is like
totally
crippling, like that just like that idea of
yeah
yeah I don't know
yeah I mean if you think about I think I saw a number recently that like roughly 1 billion people on the planet are already struggling with some kind of mental health thing.
Right.
The mental health infrastructure that we have is already like totally not meeting the existing need, and we're just like cooking it up more, right? As climate impacts intensify and awareness of this issue intensifies. So like there are not enough therapists on the planet to possibly use that model to meet the need, right? And so this idea that actually Britt Ray talks about in that episode about like peer support counselors and basically equipping normal people with these skills that, you know, there's real need for mental health professionals in certain situations. But for a lot of what we're talking about, people kind of need like well-held, you know, containers, like the kind of thing that Alcoholics Anonymous, right, manages to do. It's like,
yeah,
that's peer-to-peer support. And it gets a lot of people a lot of the way that they need to go.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's really exciting to think about, yeah, how more of us could help, right? And
yeah. And, you know, Catherine edited this book called All We Can Save, which I'm also in. And it's a collection of women writers. And the cool thing that she did with that book is that she created a whole program called Circles, which is that you can like basically read this book with a community of people around you. And that is doing what we're talking about here. Right. Mm-hmm. Like you don't have to go get a climate informed therapist specifically to talk about the problem and the solutions. You could, for example, pick up a copy of All We Can Save and ask a few friends from work or a few friends from your community to sit down and read the book with you over the course of a few weeks and have conversations. You know, that's the kind of scalable model that would allow a lot more people to find a pathway into climate work. And that doesn't have to be like professional work. It can also just be in their day-to-day lives.
Right.
Totally.
Yeah.
Well, that.
Like building a human, like a connection-based movement where you're like connecting with other people and communicating with other people as opposed to giving your life to a oil company.
I am loving how much you are hating on effective altruism. It is amazing.
It's because like I've talked about it before. People have been like, yeah, but they do some good. And it's just like, there's something really like at the very philosophical core. And like that was what I studied in school. And like there's just something from the outset at the core that I was like, this is there's like some eugenics buried in there in its worldview.
Yes.
Because they're like,
and so mechanical.
Yeah.
It's like, it's really weirdly robotic, like at its heart, I feel.
Yeah. So I don't know. I also think it's very dangerous because the apparatus that we're talking about that is like, you know, the establishment currently and that has the New York Times and like has a lot of powerful like tools at its disposal and a lot of inertia. Like they are not going to go into the future as like allowing themselves to be defined as the bad guy. So they're going to come up with something that allows them to be like, no, we're the good guys. This is like actually really smart and cool.
Yeah, like,
what
it was
doing.
Cool that we totally burned down the planet because like we made money in the process. Actually, it's funny. There's this professor who I've criticized who won the Nobel Prize in economics for his work on climate.
Leah like swings really big when she takes on a people didn't like it. Yeah.
But anyway, he, you know, his models, which he won the Nobel Prize for, which I was like, seriously, he claims that, like, you know, yeah, climate change will collapse Earth systems, whatever. But like, the thing is, agriculture is like 4% of global GDP. So even if all agriculture collapses, it's like NBD because it's only 4%, and we're gonna have like so much more growth in other sectors. So like, whatever. But then you're like, dude, but there'll be no food.
Yeah,
and how's that gonna go? You know, like you're like,
it's crazy
what?
How important like, that 4% is.
I know, right? Almost like we're maybe undervaluing it with just reducing it to like a GDP number. Oh, yeah. I don't know. Maybe.
Yeah, maybe well, GDP so isn't like... maybe the standard to be measuring these things by in terms of importance.
Right.
And it's like this stuff gets so disembodied. It's like, like these philosophies like in the ether, whatever. But like we live on a planet and the planet is real. And like if there's material stuff that is possible or not possible here. And if we're not acting, you know, within the bounds of the physical reality of this, again, like very amazing Earth, as another one of our lovely climate friends, Kate Marble, says, this is the only good planet. So, like, we'd better get serious about
it. Yeah, it's not like Mars is a good planet.
To live here.
No,
Mars
not.
Is not a good planet. No, no. Bad planet.
The way they address that is by shifting the timeline. So they're like, 400 years in the future, we'll be able to travel to other planets. And
we will have
not be
done that
deal.
With all of our amazing, like, petrochemical extraction and stuff.
Exactly.
Like, we did that. Like, gold star for us. Yeah.
Gold star.
Yeah. It's the cave in Dr. Strangelove. It's a bunch of, like, rich guys in a room deciding they'll just have to be the ones who carry the species forward by, you know, having sex a bunch in a cave somewhere. And yeah, it's dark.
I got to watch that film for a class in high school, and I'm still like, what a great, like, we had a class movie night to watch and discuss Dr. Strangelove. I'm like, I would like to go back to school some days. No grades, no homework, just like, you know, the experiences.
Just vibes.
Just more of that. Yeah, just the vibes.
Just vibes. All right. Well, enough of the light stuff. We do have to get to the mott sticks.
let's take a quick
break, and we'll be right back.
Do you want to hear about the $100 wedding dress that just saved Abercrombie?
Or the tech acquisition that was just like Game of Thrones?
Or the one financial equation that can solve climate change?
Then check out our daily podcast, The Best One Yet, or as we call it, T-Boy.
This is Nick.
This is Jack.
And we pick the three most interesting business news stories every day for the perfect mix.
20 minutes each morning, you're going to feel brighter.
We call it Pop Biz, don't we, Jack?
Where pop culture meets business news. So whether you want to kick off a conversation with your buddies,
or you're going for that promotion at work,
or you just want to know the trends before your friends,
feel brighter by starting your morning with us every weekday.
Listen to The Best One Yet on the Wondery app or wherever you get your pods.
You can listen to The Best One Yet ad-free right now on Wondery Plus. For more deep dive and daily business content, listen on Wondery, the destination for business podcasts.
With shows like The Best One Yet, How I Built This, and many more, Wondery means business.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
The best conversations I have with my colleagues are the ones that happen when no one is looking, when we're not 100% sure yet what to write.
Hopefully, having conversations like this can help you figure out your own point of view. That's kind of our job as Washington Post opinions columnists. I'm Charles Lane, Deputy Opinion Editor.
And I'm Amanda Ripley, a contributing columnist. We're going to bring you into these conversations on a new podcast called Impromptu.
Follow Impromptu now, wherever you listen.
And we're back. Woo. Yeah. Sorry. We ended up filling up a lot of time with effective altruism. But when I think the question on everyone's mind is TGI Fridays, Mott Sticks, got no Motts.
Really disappointing stuff coming out of this X brand food company that I'm now a virulent hater of, Inventure Foods Incorporated. So
but they sound so wholesome.
They sound so wholesome.
Inventure Foods. Inventure. All right.
Well, long story short, a federal judge in Chicago allowed a class action lawsuit to move forward when it was discovered that the advertised TGI Fridays mozzarella snack sticks actually do not contain mozzarella, but only cheddar cheese.
What?
Okay, I know.
Wait.
What?
So are these the frozen sticks?
Yes, these are the frozen ones. So the big note that we have on this is, if you, like me, love to just get your Fridays started by snacking on some apps at your local TGI Fridays, fret not. The story is not about the actual restaurants. You're good. You can still get your pints, your whatever cocktail they got going on Fridays, and enjoy some apps. We're all down for that. However, when it comes to the frozen snacks, of which I am also a fan, we're being lied to. And I think that this story, while absolutely not important at all, also comes at a time when we are seeing the repercussions of people taking what is advertised at face value. And I think that it is important that we crush this narrative that the the very cool company Inventure Foods Inc. claims is, what would they say? It's not reasonable that a customer would think a shelf-stable, crunchy snack product actually contained mozzarella, which is such horseshit to me. You can't be advertising something and be like, okay, well, surely you didn't actually think it was going to have this. Just say it doesn't have it. This is like the Pepsi points thing all over again.
When they're like, did you watch that? I loved it.
I'm not going to lie. Wait, I watched
the Pepsi points thing.
Oh, Jack. Leah, would you like to
What have
this
you
one?
Been doing? There's a Netflix show. It's called like Dude, Where's My Jet? Mm-hmm. And it's about this kid who in the 90s collected all these Pepsi points he bought them because you could buy them based on the fine print so that he could get a jet, which was advertised, a really expensive fighter jet. And it ended up going through the court system. And there was this really pro corporate judge, which we could end up with here. I mean, the judge might just be like, yeah, mozzarella, cheddar, what's the difference? NBD, you know?
Right.
So, yeah. But
that
anyway,
does seem to be the Supreme Court we have. So, yeah.
Yeah, it's quite a good Netflix show. I would recommend it. If you're into like 90s nostalgia and like, you couldn't really call it crime. I guess it's like advertising, false advertising.
Yeah.
It's quite funny.
And I think it's what we're going through here with the idea that the no reasonable person would think. It's that you have to be, at this point, we are all so familiar with the idea of fine print. It's like everything is in the fine print. So any little, like, you know, any leeway that we're allowed to have, we're looking for that. And so when you advertise a Harrier jet for 7 million Pepsi points, I'm figuring out how to get those 7 million Pepsi points and getting a Harrier jet. And in this scenario, if you're saying they're mod sticks, I'm expecting to take those things out of the microwave, crack them open, and have that ooey gooey mess of mozzarella cheese spill out onto my plate. And when you're telling me it's cheddar, I'm taking you to court.
For shame. For
First
shame.
Of all, I'm glad that kid didn't get a Harrier jet. Personally, like, what? Just how was he planning to fuel that?
That is a big part of the first episode. Yes, but it moves on from there.
Also, I'm just surprised as a food lover such as yourself that you were a fan of these and didn't like. Have they taken all the flavor out of the cheddar to disguise it as mozzarella? Those are two cheeses that seem like they would be easily discernible from one another.
You know, that's funny that you mentioned that because, like, while cheddar
the
itself
myopia has on display here,
Daniel,
is
bam, we're back. You know what's fun? What's fun about cheddar cheese versus, and you find this with, like, you know how Subway had the all of our meats are just turkey and blah blah blah. It's like you can kind of just inject flavor into these very base substances to make them whatever you want. And cheddar is definitely one of those kinds of cheeses that has such a range of flavors. You have your very soft mild cheddars to your super sharp Vermonts or whatever. Where it's like cheddar can be anything, baby. But it's like in this particular scenario, if you're advertising Mott's, what are you doing? What are you doing?
But at least it was an American on the
I love
like to find the silver lining. I don't know.
American, but that's a different story entirely. That goes to the burger thing, which I'm slowly transitioning out of. But alas.
Hi guys, I think this might be as big of a story as like the fossil fuel companies lying to us for like decades about climate change. I mean, this is like, this should
be
on the cover.
Same umbrella.
It's all of a piece, right? It's like, like this sense of like, we're a corporation and we can say whatever and we can puppeteer people in ways that are minor, like the cheddar slide, and also really major, like, I don't know, we'll bake the planet.
And in the world. Yeah.
Like a mozzarella stick.
And guess what you're not going to get to do on a, you know, baked planet? You're not going to get to have those nice mozzarella sticks.
You're not going to get to have them at all.
Nobody wants a future without mozzarella sticks.
Thank you. That's how I feel.
Is cheddar the, like, shit cheese? Yeah, I also didn't realize that people, that you could be like, oh my God, they're trying to serve me cheddar? Like, how dare you? I thought cheddar was like, it's a definitely a more flavorful, like sharp cheddar is very flavorful.
Sharp cheddar,
not
good.
Yeah,
I
like
cheddar.
It's not
a thing that I'm, it's always interesting. Like, so there's that book Salt, Sugar, Fat by Michael Moss that is about like how the food industry operates. And they have this section that I always bring up because it's so mind blowing that like a lot of the like cheesiness of food in the 80s and 90s was driven by an excess of milk fat that they had stored in a cave somewhere.
This is what,
because of skim milk's popularity in the late 70s and early 80s.
They had
all these fat like excesses. And so they were like, all right. So they made deals with fast food companies that, and they could get like cheese really cheaply. So I'm just like picturing a cheddar cheese exit, like a bumper cheddar cheese, and they're just like backing a truck up to these places, just being like, take this cheddar off our hands, please.
Same thing with corn subsidies and high fructose corn syrup. It's the same reason. Yeah. It's just that we have such an excess of it because of how we subsidize it that we just put it in literally everything.
Yeah. Anyway. But they can do it. They can get away with it. They can't be sued because the Supreme Court is protecting corporations.
Long story short,
paid for
indeed
also by the fossil fuel industry.
Bam. Long story short, power to the people. Don't be lied to by these large conglomerates, and don't let Inventure Foods tell you that you can't have Mott sticks out of the microwave. God. Thank you very much.
And don't let whoever did the branding for Inventure Foods get near your startup.
just be honest. If you, who doesn't have any milk in it, call it a chocolate drink, and I'm fine with that. And that's what they have done. They made that decision, and I'm fine with that. I'm still sipping on that Yoo-hoo. Fine by me.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Well, Catherine, Leah, such a pleasure having you both on the Daily Zeitgeist. Where can people find you, follow you, hear you, all that good stuff?
Well, you can find the pod at degreespod.com.
Or and just anywhere.
Anywhere you get podcasts. Yeah. Wherever you're listening to this podcast, we are also there. You can find me on social media at Dr. K. Wilkinson.
And I'm on Twitter, however long that platform lasts, at Leah with an H, Stokes. And we're out there trying to save the planet. And we are always, always wanting more people to jump in on the climate bandwagon. It is a cool bandwagon and it is open for all.
Especially with that heat pump up. It's pretty cool.
I know. There's fairies. We have fairy dance parties. Just like, yeah, it's very cool.
Is there a tweet or some other work of social media that you've been enjoying? Leah, let's start with you.
Oh, well, I think I misunderstood the assignment because I don't know if you remembered that I read books.
Please.
My media is a book. And actually, I think you might quite like this book, Jack, given what you've been saying. It's called Ducks, 2 Years in the Oil Sands, and it's a graphic novel written by Kate Beaton, who did that whole Hark a Vagrant stuff, if you remember. Anyway, she's like a cool comic. Anyway, it's a book about like the horrors that is capitalism and the fossil fuel industry. And it's beautiful. It's about the tar sands in Canada, and I just loved it. So that's what I'm really into right now. Ducks, 2 Years in the Oil Sands. But sorry, it's not online.
D-U-C-K-S.
Yeah, ducks, like.
I just didn't know how to spell
like
that
quack
word,
quack.
So thank you.
Like quack quack. Yeah, there you go. Okay. I don't know if you know words. They come in books and stuff. That's like a thing. Yeah.
No, the quack quack was actually very helpful. Thank you. Catherine, how about you?
Oh, I mean, when I saw Dave Wasserman's tweet last night, I've seen enough. Like that tweet gave me more life than anything on social media recently. I've also on the book thread, Finn, did you know about the Libby app?
Yes,
it's connected.
I have four library cards, lady.
Okay, it's connected to your public library, and you can just go wild on audiobooks, because unlike Leah, I do not have time or enough time to read. And so I've been listening to Octavia Butler, Parable of the Sower, and now Parable of the Talents. And man, I mean, there's a guy who runs for president on the theme of Make America Great Again. Like, this woman was so tapping into the future. Yeah. It's incredible.
I just read the first one a couple months ago, actually.
Oh, nice. I was scared. I was like a little scared to like
the second
be so
one is kind of upsetting, but though, to be honest. I got to be honest. I got about 3/4 of the way through Parable of the Talents, and I was like, this is so depressing. Mm. But I mean, it's great. She's a genius. She's a prophet. She saw the future.
Yeah.
But like,
yeah, we get it. You're a genius. You're a prophet.
But it just gets a little depressing. You know what I mean? Like, damn.
No, I feel you. Daniel, how about you? Oh, go ahead.
I was going to jump the gun and just say thank you, but now I want to hear from Daniel.
Daniel, what about you? Do you read books? Are you still on the interweb? Yeah.
How about you, dum-dum?
Both. But Lord knows we're about to bring the quality of the content way down here with a couple stupid-ass tweets, because I live for an absolutely inconsequential observation about nothing. So this one comes from Alita Battle Angel. Oh, wait, first of all, you can find me on the internet at DJ_Daniel on all things. I'm live on Twitch Wednesdays, Fridays, and Sundays if you want to see Bad Rocket League and me eating food in a gross manner. That's not really true. I don't do that all the time, just sometimes, but it's fun to do. Anyway, this is a tweet from Alita Battle Angel Stan account at Punished Picnic. Here's the problem with fruit. It's inconsistent. Some apples are delicious. Some taste bad. Sometimes blueberries are great. Sometimes they are disgusting. You know what's the same every time? Doritos.
That's a good point.
Love that.
That's that capitalist consistency we look for these days.
That is where, like, we could have all of this shit fixed by now, but instead, like, all of our brightest minds went into the labs at Doritos and created the perfect nacho cheese flavored Dorito that you can't stop eating. That is where our greatest minds and scientific innovations have gone for the past century.
I got one more slightly more contemporary one from Josh Gondelman, at Josh Gondelman. This new AI picture thing is ridiculous. If you want a portrait of yourself, you should get it the old-fashioned way, by falling in love with a charming stranger on an intercontinental sea voyage and then paying him to draw you like one of his French girls.
Yes.
Thank you.
That's the way it's done.
Amen to that.
Mm, old school.
Indeed. Jack, what about you?
Gosh, a lot of really smart stuff. I think I'm going to go with this tweet from Drill. In real life, Yoda would get eaten by a dog.
That's so harsh on Yoda, dude.
It's just harsh facts. You know, we're all about living in that reality.
Oh, my God.
That does feel kind of Parable of the Talents.
So
yeah, dude.
Terrible.
Took a dark turn.
You can find me on Twitter at Jack_O'Brien. You can find us on Twitter at Daily Zeitgeist. We're at The Daily Zeitgeist on Instagram. We have a Facebook fan page and a website, dailyzeitgeist.com, where we post our episodes and our footnotes. We link off to the information that we talked about in today's episode, as well as we link off to a song that we think you might enjoy. And with Miles out, we like to always ask super producer Justin Smith if there's a song that he would like to recommend.
I do. I'm going to visit my beloved home city of Chicago tomorrow, so I'll be out for the next couple of days, so I want to shine some light on a Chicago artist. This is an artist named Knox Fortune.
Oh.
Comes from Oak Park. Shout out Oak Park. This is a song called Little Thing. It's such a nostalgic vibe for me. If you are a child of the 90s, this will really have you feeling a certain way. It's got a lo-fi DIY kind of style to it, and there's just like bright pads and talking about a summer love, and it really will send you back to that time of, you know, just being in the young kid in the city. So this Little Thing by Knox Fortune. You can find that in the footnotes.
Awesome.
Footnotes. All right. Well, we will link off to that in the footnotes. The Daily Zeitgeist is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows. That's going to do it for us this morning. Back this afternoon to tell you what is trending, and we'll talk to y'all then. Bye.
Bye.
Here's something you might not know about wireless. Sometimes what you see isn't what you get. But with Visible, what you see is what you get. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. Just $25 per month, taxes and fees included. Switch now at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
There's two kinds of people in the world, people who love Health Aid kombucha and people who have never tried it. The bubbly mix of probiotic tea and refreshing juice is delicious and good for your gut health, with great flavors to choose from that you can't help but love. If you've never tried it before, maybe try a bottle or can of passion fruit tangerine or ginger lemon. Your taste buds and your gut will thank you. Look for the brown bottle with an anchor on it and try Health Aid kombucha today.
Health Aid kombucha.
The Toolkit Podcast is where your favorite filmmakers come to talk about their craft and process.
I don't want a sloppy angle in my movie ever.
It's like being a dancer. You find the freedom in the structure.
It's where Tarantino, Gerwig, Scorsese, and Jordan Peele discuss their latest films, and showrunners take us behind the scenes of the best of TV.
Hosted by IndieWire's craft team, Toolkit is an award-winning podcast that gets at the heart of what really matters for filmmakers, like Spike Lee.
It comes back to this storytelling. What can I use in my toolbox